Theological Seminary in Chester, Pennsylvania, graduated a man who has become a giant in the cause of democracy, a man who is a product of the Southern civilization and whom someday all of the South will proudly claim as its son. Our speaker's story is the story of many Negro leaders of many faiths who came together in the bond of a cause they knew was right. And his story is the story of Negro followers in Montgomery, Alabama, many of them well up in years, who walked to work and home again as many as 12 miles a day for over a year, rather than submit to the discourtesies and the humiliation of segregated buses. The majority of the Negroes who took part in the year-long boycott of Montgomery's buses were poor and unsuited, but they understood the essence of the Montgomery movement. In his book, Stride Toward Freedom, the Reverend Mr. King pointed to one elderly woman who seemed to sum up the Negro's case for justice. After several weeks of walking, a newspaper man asked her if she was tired. She replied, "My feet are tired, but my soul is at rest." We at UAW believe the soul and conscience of America is coming around to rest because of this great human being. I am proud to ask to speak to you the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., the Reverend King. Mr. Chairman, President Ruther, Distinguished Secretary of Labor, Mr. Goldberg, Senator Hart, and all of the distinguished guests assembled here on the platform, delegates and friends of UAW, ladies and gentlemen. I need not pause to say how very delighted I am to be here this evening and to be a part of this auspicious occasion. And I cannot stand here without giving just a word of thanks to this great union for all that you have done across these 25 years. You have made life more meaningful for millions of people, and I'm sure that America is a better place in which to live as a result of the great work that has been done by UAW. You have given to this nation a magnificent example of honest democratic trade unionism. And your great president, Walter Ruther, will certainly go down in history as one of the truly great persons of this generation. I bring greetings to you this evening from the hundreds and thousands, yea, millions of people in the Southland who are struggling for freedom and human dignity. I bring greetings to you from the thousands of Negro students who have stood up courageously against the principalities of segregation. For all of these months, they have moved in a uniquely meaningful orbit, imparting light and heat to distant satellites. And as a result of their nonviolent yet courageous struggle, they have been able to bring about integration in more than 139 cities of the lunch counter. I am sure that when historians look back over this particular era of our history, they will have to record this movement as one of the most significant epochs of our heritage. Now, as I think with you tonight and think about this significant occasion, I would like to open by saying that organized labor has come a long, long way from the days of the strike-breaking injunctions of federal courts, from the days of intimidation and firings in the plant, from the days that your union leaders could be physically beaten with impunity. The clubs and the claws of the heartless anti-labor forces have been clipped, and you now have organizations of strength and intelligence to keep your interests from being submerged and ignored. This is certainly the glorious meaning of your 25th anniversary. Negroes who are now but beginning their march from the dark and desolate Egypt of segregation and discrimination can gain from you real inspiration and encouragement for the hard road still ahead. But though we have a multitude of problems almost absorbing every moment of our time and consuming almost every ounce of our energy, we cannot be unmindful of new problems confronting labor. Toward these problems, we are not neutral, because they are our problems as well. The also workers are facing hardcore unemployment, new economic patterns through automation and relocation of plants is dissolving the nation's basic industry. This is to me a catastrophe. We are neither technologically advanced nor socially enlightened as a nation if we witness this disaster for tens of thousands without finding a solution. And by a solution, I mean a real and genuine alternative, providing the same living standards and opportunities which were swept away by a force called progress, but which for many is destruction. The society that performs miracles with machinery has the capacity to make some miracles for men, if it values men as highly as it values machines. This is really the crux of the problem. Are we as concerned for human values and human resources as we are for material and mechanical values? The automobile industry is not alone a production complex of assembly lines and steel forming equipment. It is an industry of people who must live in decency, with security for children, for old age, for health, and a cultural life. Automation cannot be permitted to become a blind monster which grinds out more cars and simultaneously snuffs out the hopes and lives of the people by whom the industry was built. Perhaps few people can so well understand the problems of auto workers and others in labor as Negroes themselves, because we built the cotton economy for 300 years of slaves, on which the nation grew powerful, and we still lack the most elementary rights of citizens, our workers. We too realize that when human values are subordinated to blind economic forces, human beings can become human scrap. Our kinship was not born, however, with the rise of automation and the birth of your organization. As you confronted recalcitrant antagonists, you forged new weapons appropriate to your fight. Thus in the 30s, when industrial unionism sought recognition as a form of industrial democracy, there were powerful forces which said to you the same words, "We as Negroes here now, never. You are not ready. You are really seeking to change our form of society. You are red. You are troublemakers. You are stirring up discontent and discord where none exists. You are interfering with our property rights. You are captives of sinister elements who would exploit you." Both of us have heard these reckless charges. Both of us know that what we have sought was simple, basic needs, without which no man is a whole person. In your pursuit of these goals during the middle 30s, and part of your industry, you creatively stood up for your rights by sitting down at your machine, just as our courageous students are sitting down at lunch counters across the South. They screamed at you. They screamed at you and said that you were destroying property rights. But nearly 30 years later, the ownership of the automobile industry is still in the hands of its stockholders. The value of its shares has multiplied many fold, producing profits of awesome size. We are proudly borrowing your technique. Though the same old and tired threats and charges have been dusted off of us, we doubt that we shall collectivize a single lunch counter or nationalize the consumption of sandwiches and coffee. Because you persisted in your quest for a better life, you brought new horizons to the whole nation. Industry after industry was compelled to civilize its practices, and in so doing, benefited themselves along with you. The new unions became social institutions which stabilized the nation, fortified it, thrust it up to undreamed of levels of production. There are more ties of kinship between labor and the Negro people than tradition. For example, labor needs a wage power bill which puts the firm floor on the wage scale. Negroes need the same measure. Even more desperately, for so many of us earn less than $1.25 per hour. Labor needs housing legislation to protect it as a consumer. Negroes need housing legislation also. Labor needs an adequate old age medical care bill and so do Negroes. The list might be extended ad infinitum, for it is axiomatic that what labor needs, Negroes need. And simple logic, therefore, puts us side by side in the struggle for all elements of a decent standard of living. As we survey the problems of labor, from the chilling threat of automation to the needs in housing and social welfare generally, we confront the necessity to have a Congress responsible to liberal legislation. Here again, the kinship of interest of labor and the Negro people expresses itself. Negroes need liberal congressmen if they are to realize equality and opportunity. The campaign to grant the ballot to Negroes in the South has profound implications. From all I have outlined, it is clear that the Negro vote would not be utilized in a vacuum. Negroes exercising a free suffrage would march to the polls to support those candidates who would be partial to social legislation. Negroes in the South, whether they elected white or Negro congressmen, would be placing in office a liberal candidate, if you will, a labor candidate. No other political leader. No other political leader could have a program possessing appeal to Negroes. In these circumstances, the campaign for Negro suffrage is both a fulfillment of constitutional rights, the fulfillment of labor's needs in a fast-changing economy. Therefore, I feel justified in asking you for your continued support in the struggle to achieve the ballot all over the nation, and in the South in particular. We, the Negro people and labor, by extending the frontiers of democracy to the South, inevitably will sow the seeds of liberalism, where reaction has flourished unchallenged for decades. A new day will dawn, which will see militant, steadfast, and reliable congressmen from the South joining those from the northern industrial states to design and enact legislation for the people rather than for the privileged. Now, I need not say to you that this problem and all of the problems which we face in the nation and in the world, for that matter, will not work itself out. We know that if the problem is to be solved, we must work to solve it. Evolution may be true in the biological realm, but when we seek to apply to the whole of society, that is very little evidence for it. Social progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless effort and the persistent work of dedicated individuals. Without this hard work, time itself becomes the ally of the insurgent and primitive forces of social stagnation. So in order to realize the American dream of economic justice and of the brotherhood of man, men and women all over the nation must continue to work for it. Now, there are certain words that are used in every academic discipline. Pretty soon they become a part of the technical nomenclature of that discipline. Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any word in modern psychology. It is the word maladjusted. This is the ringing cry of the new child of psychology, maladjusted. Now, certainly all of us are desirous of living the well-adjusted life. In order to avoid the neurotic and schizophrenic personality. But if you will allow the preacher in me to come out now, let me say to you that there are some things within our social order to which I'm proud to be maladjusted, to which I call upon you to continue to be maladjusted.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. I thought I would play you a bit of Dr. Martin Luther King And the reason I played that is that we knew that 50 years of the anniversary and the commemorative. And I sat and watched and listened, and I saw many of people gathering around politicians, and they seem, as many point out, seem to think that, but maybe it's just out of convenience to look hip and look stylish, is to quote Dr. Martin Luther King, for the we shall overcome, and I've seen the mountaintop. But believe it or not, folks, that for those of you, the younger people, and the ones who are not quite familiar, Dr. Martin Luther King had great depth and great understanding and conveyed the message. And unfortunately, it became and has become a black message, when in fact it's a human message, a message that, just insert the names. At that time, it was that speech that I played earlier, was the Negro, we the Negroes. But again, whether it's you're being discriminated against because of your religion, because of your sex, because of your creed, as he states, because of your sexual orientation, or your nationality, or your ethnicity. And he spoke so eloquently about all of this, and I look now and I see you take, for example, the state legislators. While we know they have to legislate here in Hawaii, we know they have to legislate, and we know the Senate has to legislate. We know that. We know that it's politics. They have to be careful. Careful in such a fashion not to offend or harm any one party while trying to care and take care of for the other. But in the state of Hawaii, what has happened, that is not the discipline. The discipline is to let's collect ourselves and caucus ourselves and perform as if we're detached. And quite often they so carelessly, I should say, invoke the Dr. Martin Luther King reference, when in fact it is something that they need to go back to school and learn that there was so much depth. There was, it impacted all of us. Whether you were a poor person in the Appalachia, you benefit. Whether you were a poor white person in the Appalachia or the West Virginia or the back hills of Tennessee, you benefited from not just Dr. Martin Luther King. It took a number of people, an entire nation actually, to decide that it was time for a change, and we should never have presented and put ourselves in this place in the first place. So I played that, and I will be playing some more later on, just to, and that is what's missing here. We see the gay rights, the activities that are occurring. We see that the governor made his public appearance at the commemorative, the whatever you call it, last week, and there were a number of people there, and they seem to benefit from peripheral activity. They're not really involved in civil rights in the state. They're not involved in the well-being of this country, in my opinion. Too many of them come out and present themselves as superficially caring. But at the process, let's just take the recent activities on the same-sex marriage. I think a greater degree of transparency should have been displayed if you're approaching it in a democratic way, not tactics such as the governor threatening Michael Galoyu and others that he had hired, the governor had hired or given them a job, and dictate to them that they rescind their complaints against other legislators. It wasn't his business. But I was saddened to see him there at the state capitol participating and uttering the words of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I'm saying to myself, you know, maybe we owe some kind of debt to the people of this state to create a resurgence or stimulate a new discussion, because you take John Mizuno, you take Chris Lee, these are state representatives. They're not true. They have absolutely nothing ethical about their approach to democracy and the American dream. Absolutely nothing. They couldn't see it if you showed it to them 10 times in different forms, because they're not motivated from the sake of people, the health of the nation, the health of the state, the welfare of the people that are being impacted. They're not motivated by it. They're motivated by the clique that has been created here in the state capital, here in the state. And there are many others, Sharon Har, Karen Iwana. It has become a club of sort, the very type of club with the same activities that Dr. Martin Luther King spoke about. And there is one absolutely great speech that he gave about politicians and talking about how they have the responsibility. But for some reason, we have diverted all resources, attention to the welfare of the people, which makes a healthy nation. If you've got healthy activities and stimulating people, it makes for a good nation. But when you take something as basic as, we don't know what buildings are going to be built in our cities anymore, because the governor, who so eloquently reminded us that he admired President Barack Obama and Dr. Martin Luther King, but if you took those words away from him, you wouldn't know him from the next guy, in the southern guy who banned you from going to school or forced you to ride on separate buses, because it's impacting people. The Micronesians are here, and I thought I had it bad of having to hear the word repeatedly and have others to talk, call me nigger and what have you when I was growing up. I thought that was painful. But I'm reminded of something here in this place called Paradise, Hawaii, that is more evil, more distasteful than anything I've seen or been reminded of ever in my entire life, is how we project on the Micronesian community. It's as if they're not human. And I mean, it comes from top down, from the people that are sitting in the parks who are complaining that the Micronesians are taken over and they're just, we should send them all back. And I'm thinking, this is the same rhetoric and the same hatred that I grew up listening to and trying to navigate and trying to avoid and trying to just the mere hearing it is painful. And so I imagine we don't have anyone in our state capital speaking out with vigor, with commitment, conviction, to remind us, at minimum, the Micronesian people are human beings, first of all, socially, economically impacted. But we all are here, unless you have a friend in the White House or a friend in government here. You can get a job, or a friend who works for a government agency who can bring you through the back door, or you can get to double dip. But the bottom line, that is what is happening here, is that if I will tell you, to go and tell me how far we've come to talk about democracy and freedom and hatred and ridding ourselves of that, I would say we have gone 100 miles backwards. And for those of you out there who think less of the Micronesians, I can say to you that you need to check your heart, because I won't even begin to mention to you that the fact that the Micronesian people were bombed, their lands were bombed, contaminated with radiation, so that we can have a freer country, because we could have the big gun or the big stick amongst the national or the world community. So I play that, and I'll play some more, and just going to intersperse quite a bit of stuff here, but I got one thing I want to share with you, and maybe some of you, this is a long shot, but we'll try. On my On my way into the studio, I see in the freeway on the far left lane, I was safe about it. I found a ukulele in its case. So if anyone out there has lost an ukulele or looking for one, give me a call at 782-6627, 782-6627. You describe it and I'll give it to you. It has its numbers on it. I don't know what the value of them and what the importance is. It may be a $5 ukulele, but it may be important to someone else. It could be grandfather gave someone this. I don't know. But if you know someone that have, I found it coming from the Kauka Boulevard, the exchange there at the near the H1 and H2. So if you know someone that lost it, give me a call, and I'd be happy to get it back to you. And it's obviously I won't bother to tell you the make and all, but it's so unique in that if someone lost it, they'll know. So anyway, feel free to call me, 782-6627, and I don't know how long we keep these things. But anyway, that's, and then speaking of freeways, I wanted to share with you something yesterday you saw the traffic. We were stuck in it for, it was bogged down for about 4 hours. And a lot of things presented themselves, a lot of information, a lot of, you know, I can't believe that moment for me. And so what I found to be striking about and interesting was you heard the first report that it looked like cement. It looks, it was dirt. Then it looked like cement. They characterize it as cement. And I'm sitting there grimacing, thinking they're going to send the firemen and the policemen to this site. And because we have to move traffic. People have to get to their baseball games, the soccer fields, and get to the party, or the you know, they're having a TV party for the there's some sports on TV. So they all got it. So you got to clear that freeway. And I'm thinking, I'm a fan of policemen and fan of firemen and anybody in public service. My hat's off to them, because the unknowns. And in this situation, this is truly an unknown. So I'd like to ask, how many of you out there think they're being paid enough? We all grumble that, well, they're being paid too much, and we just gave them an increase in salary and what have you. So I was sitting there thinking, okay, dirt in the middle of the freeway, 2 o'clock-ish on a weekend. So this is me thinking. I'll give you an insight of how I think and what goes on in my mind. So I'm sitting here in traffic thinking, wow, this is going to be a long time. So then we check on the internet, and we find out that it's dirt, and they got pictures. And the firemen are responding. And I'm thinking, you know, that from an environmental concern, it's 2 o'clock-ish on a weekend. Truck loses its load in the freeway. Coming from the east direction, traveling westbound, knowing what I know, immediately I start to think, what's a trucker hauling dirt at this time of the day? PVT landfill is closed, so they're not open, so they wouldn't be receiving the dirt. And the landfill, the Wymanala Gulch landfill, isn't accepting that kind of dirt. And then I'm thinking, well, are these guys going to be sent to the scene? Because they got to get the traffic clear. They got to move traffic. Are they going to send the policemen and the firemen into this area and start to sweep it up, and not knowing if this pile of dirt, if just assuming that this is what was happening, this pile of dirt contained chemicals, contained chlorodane, aldrin, dildrin, or lead, mercury, cadmium, all of those things. How do we know? Or insecticides? We don't know. But imagine now, if you think they're the firemen are being paid too much, just listen to this, and then you'll think 16% wouldn't even compensate them for what they're, the unknowns that they're dealing with. And imagine the policeman. The policeman arrives, he gets dispatched there and shows up, and there he is standing there, he or she standing there directing traffic because, you know, got to be safe. They got to protect you from you and other drivers. And they're standing there in the wind swirling and don't know what the dirt is, but it's blowing and they're breathing it. And the firemen are there doing what they do best. And what happens? Well, now it's now cement. Really? When the last time do you use an open bed dump truck to carry wet cement? That's just a little hint for you experts out there in Department of Transportation and the guy that made that stupid statement, because it just don't happen. If you imagine you carrying wet cement like that, why do you think those big balls that turn around roll over? Because they want to keep it soft and keep it turning, because cement will harden up. If you've ever seen one of those large balls where the truck fails and the motor stops, it freezes and seizes the entire ball up with the cement. And sometimes you have to use dynamite to get it out or what have you. So whoever made that call surely needs to go back to school 101, the basic. And then secondly, if you're going to run out there, but you got to move the traffic, see. You can't worry about the firemen. You can get more firemen. There's a line of them standing, waiting to get in. That's the mindset. But in reality, so they show up, you dispatch them. You say it's dirt, now it's cement, and that both things are stupid. So if it is dirt or cement, then did you do any sampling? But, you know, you got to please the people. You got to move the traffic. So did you do any sampling, or did you do anything? Or did you sit down and interrogate this, and I use the term interrogate, this driver? Where'd you get this from? Where's your bill of lading? What is this? What are the constituents? What's the origin of it? Take out the guesswork. The driver was sitting right there. So imagine now, the firemen are not, they're wearing their orange, their yellow suits, and they're in there and they're cleaning up. But imagine being the policeman. 5, 10, 15 years from now, you just develop a lung problem. Quite naturally. You're not actively involved in that kind of activity, you know, cleaning up. But a couple or occasional visits to these sites exposes the unsuspecting police officer, at a minimum, to this, quote, dirt that eventually became cement that then become whatever you call it. So after sitting in traffic for a while, I'm thinking, well, you know what? Maybe I should take an interest in this, because as I shared with you, 2 o'clock-ish, truck hauling dirt toward Waianae. That's where the dumping grounds are, the dumping fields. And especially with smaller trucking companies, they'll haul, a lot of them do this anyway, even the big ones will haul under PUC costs or charges. So they get a good deal. They don't have anywhere to dump it, so they're going to dump it illegally, but they're going to swing a deal by transporting it and hauling it for the person that needs to get rid of it. So I decide, well, let me go over and look and see if it's dirt based on what... Let me try and document who the truck is and get some pictures, because I think there's something more to this than meets the eye. So I go over and I start to take pictures and I look at this material, and this material is not dirt. It could be described dirt after you process it, and it surely wasn't cement. But it had the consistency and the texture and color, a grayish coloring, and that consistent with, we'll call it mud or marine mud. If you've ever dug in a lake or some deep water or some waters that had little oxygen, or whether it was plants and other animals that have died. When you stand by it, you know the smell of mud. It's an organic. You can smell it. So I'm smelling this and looking at, and then I think, well, wait. The consistency and all of that, this must be generated in a marine environment. Clearly, it was wet and gray and smell organic. So I stand there and I decide, well, I know that in Hawaii Kai, the marina there, they're dredging. And then I remember following some trucks and doing some investigation and led me back there and did some further investigation and found that they were debating where to put this dredge material. And so what I found was the dredge material was consistent with what I'd seen at Hawaii Kai. So I concluded, just looking at that, based on that, that this was dredged materials from Hawaii Kai, because I don't know of any other active job. And this is just taking a stab at it, right, and thinking. So now I know that there was a discussion with the generator or the contractor who needs to get rid of that, because Hawaii Kai don't want it in their backyard, and they don't want to put it on their island, because that's been a big debate in that community. So where does this material end up? Ends up in Hawaii Kai, out of Hawaii Kai on the freeway. Good morning, Callie. Have a comment or question?
Oh, what's up, Carol Cox?
Alrighty, what you got? Are you listening, or are we just going to stab at something? What am I talking about today?
I know you're talking about, like, living in Hawaii Kai or something.
Okay, well, tell you what, listen in and then call me back. Alrighty?
You can't mention the 90s because you
okay,
can't.
Okay, just give 90s. Me a call back, all right? Anyway, so what goes on is, it was that I'm standing there looking at this and I'm thinking, well, I know a little history about this. They didn't want it, the contractor didn't want to take it to PVT landfill, this material that they were dredging, because they balked at the cost. But if you look at the consistency, and it had been explained to me that to work this material, it was so wet and gooey that it taxed your machinery and it cost you more time because it would stick, and voila. So thinking, you know, I see the truck is parked there that dumped it or whatever that it spilled from. And this, the trucking company is Sir S.E.R. Trucking Company. Now, I'm thinking, now, voila. Now, I know that Sir Trucking Company has been under the watchful eye of the community over there in Waianae. They have a gated, I'll call it a landfill. They say they're processing materials. But there is, if you go and look at the City and County of Honolulu's website, where you pick up information on permits and whatever, you'll see that Sir Trucking, for example, there's many, I'll just give you, over the years, have had for grading permits and stockpiling permits. They have another grading permit here just issued April 1, 2013. And that's about the time of these folks looking to get rid of their materials from Hawaii Kai. So Hawaii Kai don't want it in their backyard, you see. And they apparently are not looking to see where their contractor is going to make sure that it goes to the proper place or who gets it or what have you. And so I call Sir Trucking, and for those of you out there, there may be some of you that got your car damaged or whatever. Let me give you a phone number, first of all, to Sir Trucking. The number is 696-8492. And their address, if you need to write them, is 85-1383 Alphabet C, Waianae Valley Road. 85-1383 C, Waianae Valley Road. And I know some of you are saying, well, why is he doing that? How does he know that this? He's just guessing at this. Well, you know me. It's fun to just follow these things because I'm just concerned with the environment and my safety as well as yours. And so I did the most technical thing that you could ever imagine. It was a sophisticated act on my part. What I did was take my iPad and pull up Sir Trucking's phone number, and then I call them and talk to the owner, and the owner says, "Oh, that material is from Hawaii Kai." Very brilliant on my part. I couldn't believe it. I was sitting there just as thinking to myself, man, you're really smart. But anyway, the owner is Sandra Silva, S-I-L-V-A, 851383 C Waianae Valley Road. She said to me that, yes, the latch on the truck broke, and she's willing to, whoever is out there that got damaged or impacted their car, please feel free to call her or send them a letter or something or have your insurance, whatever. But again, the phone number is 696-8492. So that's where we start with this material. And it wasn't cement, not cement. It's not, I guess you could call it dirt. But then let's go back upstream. In the marina, they use a lot of insecticides and chlordanes and all for the houses when they fumigate the houses like anywhere else, and they do fungicides like we all do on the lawns and all, and a lot of that runs into that area, correct? So over the years, and then you have gasoline engines, boats, and what have you, and runoff from the streets, the NPDES concerns, or the non-point source pollution from oils and runoffs from the cars and streets, so run into there and they settle down into the mud. So this mud, what is it? And does it pose a risk to the firemen? Does it pose a risk to the police there? Does it pose a risk to you who sat there and had to drive through it? And now that it's dusty, that is it. As the dust whips up, one of the tenant residents there said he's worried that the dust is flying now. So just that's what happened with that. And we'll post some pictures up if you're interested in looking at pictures at carolcox.com. And again, go there and you can see some of the pictures, and we'll post up the phone numbers and contact number for Waianae Valley Road, Sir Trucking. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question? Hello? Caller?
Yeah, I'm here. I got a comment about Hawaii Kai.
Okay, well, let's go. Go ahead. I only got a couple of minutes. Go for it.
Well, I think Hawaii Kai, I know Hawaii Kai is a beautiful place for, like, people. I know Hawaii Kai is a beautiful place for, like, other people to live, but, like, you know, I mean.
I know what you're talking about. It is, but I know what you'd like to say. Why don't you tell me about the rainbows? What, real quick, I'm going to give you a minute. What do you think about that game? You're a sports.
Oh, wait,
You're a sports fan. You want to talk about sports, so go for it, Jacob.
Oh, wait, I am a sports fan.
Hurry up.
And I am from Mililani, so, like.
Hurry up. I'm going to.
I was at the UH game, and, like, Hawaii scored a touchdown, and then USC scored one touchdown, and then UH scored one touchdown, and then USC scored another touchdown, and then we left in, like, the fourth quarter. Well, we left in, like, with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and then when I left, UH had scored a touchdown, and then we lost, like, 30-13.
But you left early. If you'd have stayed, they may have won. You can't just walk out on your friends.
Oh, because, like, we...
Come on, cuz, you can't...
We lost by so many points.
That's yeah, but everything's possible, man. Don't give up.
Well, no, but, like, I mean, UH is, like, UH has a good team this year, and now we're going on the road for, like, a month. And then our next home game
Well, I'm going to tell you, if I was on the team, I would be a little disappointed in you. You're supposed to support me from start to finish, and from the start bell, and I'm disappointed in
you,
Jacob.
Were you at the UH game?
No, I was. I knew you'd be there, and I figured you had everything covered, but you walked out on them.
Are you saying
that you're the fan that only likes them when they're doing good?
No, I think we left because we were down by so many points.
Okay, well, they need the support, so don't walk in and walk out when they're not doing good, all right?
I know, but like...
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll talk to you again next week, all right?
Okay.
Aloha. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Anyway, yeah, that UH was... I had high hopes, and what the heck? It just... what is high hopes, anyway? But anyway, this trucking thing, if you ever see trucks running coming from the east side or coming from over the mountain there, and it's on a weekend, you can put your bottom dollar on it that there are some illegal or questionable activities. Not all of them now. But if the place that they're going to deposit it is closed, how do you suppose? Now, I know they could be calling topsoil and taking it to their homes. We'll allow for that. But for me, when I see a truck headed to the west side, and especially a nondescript or a small company, I really cringe. I really become concerned because yet another, and also, what is it? Is it manifested? What is being hauled? You know, so dirt is a commodity, a good, you know, valued commodity here on this island. So when you see them trucking it, why aren't they trucking it like the normal hours? And imagine, one might say, well, maybe he's going to park it at his house for the night, and then when the shop opened in the morning and the landfill opened, well, that's worse because now you're taking it into the neighborhood and dusting up your friends. So either way you look at it, it's a bad practice. So anyway, 524-1080 if you'd like to call in and chat about anything. And I don't know anything about the football game or anything. I'm having a hard enough time trying to keep up with just the daily activities. But I like football, but just for the take a glance at it, maybe one or two games a year. But that's about the extent of it. But anyway, so imagine I was talking about the policemen and what they are faced with. And you may not know it, but so these men were going to go home and they're going to wash their clothes, the policemen, and they're going to. They're going to walk into the house and into the carpet, not knowing what they were standing out there directing traffic around, tracking it into their carpet. And if they got a little toddler or family, and then they take the clothes and commingle them with the family's wash and whatever. Now, you know, one might say, well, the firemen know better. Well, the policeman is unsuspecting because greater chance of indirectly being exposed. So if you think 16% raise over what, 3 years or whatever was too much, you try standing out there and being sent to a pile of dirt that isn't dirt, that turns into cement, that, and then you're out there. So I'm not defending the police. I'm just saying to you, we need to reconsider what we think about this whole process. And we need to come up with a law that if you're hauling, you get prosecuted, whatever it is. I mean, look at the costs yesterday alone, and wasted hours and the man hours and the cleanup. They talk about when a hiker gets lost, there's this debate about charging the hiker. When a swimmer gets out and gets in trouble, a surfer, charge them for the rescue. Well, then let's see a legislation that comes about that charges the truck driver or the owner for spilling on the roads, because we've having quite a few too many. So anyway, I'll see you in the next hour. This is the Carol Cox Show. carolcox.com, carolcox.com. See you shortly.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu. It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Sail on some positions, cowardice asks, the question, is it safe? Expediency asks, the question, is it politic? Vanity asks, the question, is it popular? But conscience asks, the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe, not politic, not popular, but he must do it because conscience tells him it is right. So I close by saying, let each of us develop a kind of cosmic divine discontent will keep us standing up for a great America where all men will be able to live together as brothers and every man will respect the dignity of human personality, for an America that will place more emphasis on its moral power than on its military power. There are certain technical words within every academic discipline that soon become stereotypes or cliches. Every academic discipline has its technical nomenclature. Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is the word maladjusted. This word is, in a real sense, the ringing cry of modern child psychology. And certainly, we all want to avoid the maladjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But I close by saying that there are some things in our nation and in the world of which I'm proud to be maladjusted, which I call upon all men of goodwill to be maladjusted. until the good society is realized, I never intend to adjust myself to segregation and discrimination. I never intend to become adjusted to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few. I never intend to adjust myself to the madness of militarism and the self-defeating effects of physical violence. But in a day when Sputniks and explorers and Geminis are dashing through outer space and guided ballistic missiles are carving highways of death through the stratosphere, no nation can ultimately win victory in war. It is no longer the choice now between violence and nonviolence. It is either nonviolence or non-existence, and the alternative to disarmament. The alternative to disarmament, the alternative to a greater suspension of nuclear tests, the alternative to strengthening the United Nations and thereby disarming the whole world, the alternative to our taking the initiative to end the war in Vietnam may well be a civilization plunged into the abyss of annihilation, and our earthly habitat will be transformed into an inferno that even the mind of Dante could not imagine. The world is in need now of maybe a new organization, the International Association for the Advancement of Creative Maladjustment. Men and women. Men and women who will be as maladjusted as the prophet Amos, who in the midst of the injustices of his day could cry out in words that echo across the centuries, "Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." As maladjusted as Abraham Lincoln, who in the midst of his vacillations finally came to see that this nation could not exist half slave and half free. As maladjusted as Thomas Jefferson, who in the midst of an age amazingly adjusted to slavery, and who in the midst of owning slaves himself had to finally scratch across the pages of history words lifted to cosmic proportions, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. With such maladjustment, we will be able to emerge from the bleak and desolate midnight of man's inhumanity to man, and to the bright and glittering daybreak of freedom and justice. And let me say, I haven't lost hope. The days ahead are difficult, but I have not lost hope. This is the only thing that keeps me going, and I'm sure it's the only thing that can keep you going. I will not yield to a politics of despair. I will continue to work and hope that through that working, that we will be able to transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. So I'll close with a word of hope by saying, I can still sing, we shall overcome, because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. We shall overcome, and with this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to transform this pending international elegy into a creative psalm of peace, and we will build right here in this land a nation where all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Catholics and Protestants and all ethnic groups in our nation can join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. America is essentially a dream. It is a dream of a land where men of all races, of all nationalities, and of all creeds can live together as brothers. The substance of the dream is expressed in these profound words. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. One of the first things we notice in this dream is its amazing universalism. It does not say some men, but it says all men. It doesn't say all white men, but it says all men, which includes black men. It doesn't say all Gentiles, but it says all men, which includes Jews. It doesn't say all Protestants, but it says all men, which includes Catholics. That is something else that we notice in this dream, which is one of the things that distinguishes democracy and our form of government with other totalitarian systems. It says that there are certain basic rights that are neither conferred by nor derived from the state. In order to discover where they came from, it is necessary to move back behind the dim mist of eternity. They are God-given. Very seldom. Very seldom, if ever, in the history of the world has a socio-political document expressed in such profound, eloquent, and unequivocal language the dignity and the worth of human personality. For the American dream reminds us that every man is the heir of a legacy of dignity. And yet ever since the founding fathers of our nation dreamed this dream, America has been, to use a big word that the psychologists and the psychiatrists use, a schizophrenic personality, tragically divided. On the one hand, she has proudly professed the noble principles of democracy, and on the other hand, she has sadly practiced the very opposite of those principles. Indeed, slavery and segregation have always been strange paradoxes in a nation founded on the principle
that all men are created equal. And so often, America has trampled over the dream. So often America has scarred this noble dream. We look and see certain states saying they will never comply with the law of the land. In doing this, America is scarring the dream. We notice people who merely want to be free being brutalized, homes being bombed, churches being bombed. This is a way of scarring the American dream. We notice people who merely want to exercise their citizenship rights being thrown into jail. This is a way of scarring the dream. And we can hear the voice of a little Emmett Till crying from the rushing waters of Mississippi. This is a way of scarring the dream. And so the Negro is still trampled over by the iron feet of oppression. And so often he has been pushed out of the glittering sunlight of life's July and left standing in the piercing chill of an alpine November. This is scarring the American dream. May I say to you, as has been said so eloquently all the afternoon, this dream is being scarred not only in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, and all of the southern states, but it is being scarred in New York, in Illinois, in Pennsylvania, and I imagine even in California. The fact is that the Negro all over America is still the last hide and the first fire, and he still can't live where he wants to live and where his money can get him to live. But today, more than ever before, America is challenged to bring this noble dream into reality. For the shape of the world today does not afford us the luxury of an anemic democracy. And the price that the United States must pay for the continued exploitation of the Negro and other minority groups is the price of its own destruction. People are looking over to the United States today and they're wondering what we are doing about this problem. They're looking over from Asia and Africa. For years, most of these people have been dominated politically, exploited economically, segregated and humiliated by some foreign power. But today they are gaining their independence. More than 1,600,000,000 of the former 1,800,000,000 colonial subjects have their independence today. And they are saying in no uncertain terms that racism and colonialism must go. The hour is late. The clock of destiny is ticking out. And we must act now before it is too late. It is trite but urgently true that if America is to remain a first-class nation, she can no longer have second-class citizens. I must hasten to say that we must not solve this problem merely to meet the communist challenge. We must not seek to solve this problem merely to appeal to Asian and African peoples. This problem must be solved in the United States because segregation and discrimination are morally wrong. It must be solved because Segregation relegates persons to the status of things and stands against all of the noble principles of our Judeo-Christian heritage. It must be solved not merely because it is diplomatically expedient, but because it is morally compelling. This must be said all over the stuff. And I would say that there are some things that we must continue to do in order to make the American dream a reality and save our nation in this hour. And I would like to mention them as briefly as possible and elaborate on them briefly. First, in order to make the American dream a reality, we must seek to make the world dream a reality, and therefore we must begin with a world perspective. You see, the world in which we live is geographically one, and now we are challenged to make it spiritually one. Now, it is true that the geographical oneness of this age in which we live came into being to a large extent through man's scientific ingenuity. For man, through his scientific genius, has been able to dwarf distance and place time in change. Yes, we've been able to carve highways through the stratosphere, and our jet planes have compressed into minutes distances that once took days. Bob Hope has described this new jet age in which we live, and I think he's given an adequate description. He said it is an age in which it is possible to take a nonstop flight from Los Angeles to New York, and if on taking off in Los Angeles you develop hiccups, you will hick in Los Angeles and cup in New York City. You know, it is possible because of the time difference to take a flight from Tokyo, Japan on Sunday morning and arrive in Seattle, Washington on the preceding Saturday night. And when your friends meet you at the airport and ask when you left Tokyo, you will have to say, "I left tomorrow." This is the kind of world in which we live. This is a bit humorous, but I'm trying to laugh a basic fact into all of it, and it is simply this. That through our scientific genius, we've made of the world a neighborhood. And now through our moral and ethical commitment, we must make of it a brotherhood. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. This is what we must do. And it simply means that every nation must be concerned about every other nation. Every individual must be concerned about every other individual. Some months ago, Mrs. King and I journeyed over to that great country known as India. I never will forget the experience of talking with and meeting with the great leaders of India, and meeting people in the cities and the villages all over that country. A noble and marvelous experience. And I say to you this afternoon, there were those depressing moments. For how can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes millions of people going to bed hungry at night? How can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes millions of people sleeping on the sidewalks at night? In Calcutta, more than 1 million people sleep on the sidewalks every night. They have no beds to sleep in. They have no houses to go in. How can one avoid being depressed when he discovers that out of India's population of 400 million people, more than 365 million make an annual income of less than $60 a year, and most of these people have never seen a doctor or dentist? As I noticed these conditions, something within me cried out, "Can we in America stand idly by and not be concerned?" And an answer came, "Oh no. The destiny of India and the destiny of every other nation is tied up with the destiny of the United States, and the destiny of the United States is tied up with the destiny of India." And I started thinking about the fact that right here in America we spend more than $1 million a day to store surplus food, and I found myself saying, I know where we can store that food free of charge in the wrinkled stomachs of the hundreds and millions of people who go to bed hungry at night. Maybe. maybe we've spent far too much of our money in the United States establishing military bases around the world rather than bases of genuine concern and understanding. All I'm saying is simply this, that all life is interrelated. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. And whatever affects one directly, it affects all indirectly. As long as that is extreme poverty in this world, no man can be totally rich even if he has $1 billion. As long as diseases are rampant. As long as diseases are rampant and millions of people cannot expect to live more than 28 or 30 years, no one can be totally healthy even if he just got a checkup in the finest clinic of the nation. Strangely enough, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the way the world is made. This is the interrelated structure of reality. John Donne caught it years ago and could place it in graphic terms. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Then he goes on toward the end to say, any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. This is the meaning of having a world perspective if we are to realize the American dream. The other point is that we must get rid of the notion once and for all that there are superior and inferior races. We must make it clear all over this land and all over the world that a doctrine of white supremacy has no basis in anthropology, has no basis in scientific thinking, and has no basis in morality. Now, you know, people used to argue, this thing still gets around, people used to argue that the Negro was inferior by nature. And they went back in the Bible and they would get up certain passages in the Bible. It's a strange thing how people will use religion often to justify their prejudices. And they would go back in the Bible and they would say, now the Negro is inferior by nature because of Noah's curse upon the children of Ham. And you know, there was a great philosopher back in Greek philosophy by the name of Aristotle who did a great deal to set up formal logic, and he would have what was known as a major premise, a minor premise, and a conclusion. And so one brother during the days of slavery wanted to justify slavery, and he had set his argument up on the framework of Aristotle's thinking. He could say, now, all men are made in the image of God. Then came his minor premise, God, as everybody knows, is not a Negro, therefore the Negro is not a man. This is the kind of reasoning that prevail.
Okay, that was Dr. Martin Luther King, and again, I was motivated to play that, and I will play others later on, not today. It troubles me when I see people that are supposedly working under the same spirit and same motivation and love for people as Dr. King, and I describe them as the Democratic Party. There's no way, absolutely no way, if you had an ounce or remotely believed and adopted and incorporated what Dr. Martin Luther King preached and taught and lived, we wouldn't be sitting here picking up the newspaper to see Bishop Silva. We wouldn't see Governor Abercrombie sneaking behind closed doors and meeting with Cordero. These are people that, if you look at their history, what were they before they became preachers and pastors? You see, and now all of a sudden, we are represented by governor, legislators that would even invite or lend their ear to such hatred and bigotry. It's none of their business, but they have placed themselves in the lives of people and in making it their business. And I mean that in the sense of business, like ka-ching money. When the hats pass around in church, you preach a thing of hatred. It's no different from back in Mississippi and anywhere else. So just insert the name. You can insert Micronesians. You can insert the word gay. You can insert the word Howley. Wherever there's hatred, there is a group of people that you can profit from, believe it or not, just by preaching and teaching hatred. So, as Dr. Martin Luther King say that point, some went back to the Bible and saw and spoke about Noah and why black people were not human and what have you. This is the same thing today. We're seeing the religious movement come alive and in turn speaking ill and directing and projecting their hatred, all because of the Bible. But then what's painful is to hear them speak of Dr. Martin Luther King, to include Governor Neil Abercrombie and all of the rest of the misguided, misled people, self-centered and what have you. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yes, this is Carolyn, and I am with you. I am with you with your thoughts today, but I was at the Wednesday function. It was a rally, and I was absolutely appalled when we didn't know if Abercrombie was going to speak or not. His name, when the lists were going out on social media, sometimes his name was on it, sometimes his name was not. And I'm a Pollyanna. I was hoping that when he got up there, he was going to tell us that, number one, he had a bill ready to go with the legislature on full marriage benefits, and that he was calling the special session. I waited patiently to be polite throughout his whole speech before I lost it and just started chanting, special session now, what do we want, that is, you know, and then other people picked it up, but the press didn't pick that up, and it's been a week of horror, because the night before, I was at a lawmakers listen session over in Collegiate, and I saw I saw a Catholic priest in their Roman collars, nuns in their habits. And they were cheering when they, now I know this is sort of not correlated, but it is, because when you have religious coming out in those garments, they expect and everyone gives them special seats, special consideration. And that's when I found out that the state is giving Damien High School, the high school that is, has been awarded a $5.6 million lawsuit for sexually assaulting something like 15 students, prior students, and now the state is going to give them $1.5 million for school renovation. I'm going, what kind of a world do we live in? Number one, it's a federal offense for monies to go from taxpayers, whether it's state or federal, into any religious organization. And so I'm seeing that, and then the next day, the governor doesn't even say one thing about civil rights. It was the worst speech I've ever heard him give. He used to be a motivating speaker, just really. This time he mumbled.
Yeah.
And now I know why.
Yeah. Well, this process that I've witnessed, it asks and begs a lot, because on both sides of the, or all sides of the aisle, I think that the gay and lesbian community should have known, as I've shared with you many times, they should have known that they were being played and set up. And if you look back, the talk was amongst the gay and lesbian community. That was a talk. You didn't hear much from the religious side. You didn't hear anything from the governor, but he was busy threatening people to he would fire them or they would lose their job that he hired them if they didn't pull their complaints. That's all you heard. But the governor is calculating, and this is my insight. He would dare not. And then he came forward and says it's going to put together a bill. We know what we wanted here in the state. We know what the Supreme Court has ruled. So why wasn't he motivated to get a bill out then? Well, here's the thing. The governor knows that Mufi Hanneman still lurks in the weeds like some desperate politician to pounce on the voter. And we know that Duke Iona is going to rescue and save every non-believer and bring him to God. We know that. That's a declaration. You can see him say it on carolcox.com. It's right there in video. He's begging you. He's going to turn you over to God and make this state an entire delivered to God. So Neil Abercrombie knows that. So he played the lesbian and gay community to get them to talk and get them to harangue one another and hassle one another and insult one another and fight and then tell one another, well, hold off, we're going to have a meeting tomorrow or August 5th or the governor got something in the works. In the meantime now, guess who? There's a silent voice on the other side of the lesbian and gay community. They don't trust one another now, many of them, because they've called names, and Neil was instrumental in doing that, creating distrust, because he didn't want to commit to anything because he wants Cordero's votes. He wants the church votes. And then we should have seen this, as you can be testified that I've already spoken before it all unfolded, right? That this is what Neil Abercrombie, and then to see him there at the state capitol, even mentioning the words Martin Luther King, I'm thinking, wow, what difficulty is it to witness this? Because a true Democratic, a true man that has a heart poised to invite good for all people, he's not delivering. His examples are bad. I think you sent something about, I got another letter where Cordero had mentioned he met with the governor?
Yes. In fact, that's what incensed many of us.
Yeah.
That we keep sending letters, calls, faxes, emails, and we don't get a response from the governor. But the governor, on that Wednesday, before he talks about Martin Luther King and civil rights, he has lunch with Cordero.
Mm-hmm.
What in the blazes is that about? Mm. Except absolute betrayal.
Well,
on July 17th, I was thrown out of a meeting on 437, in room 437, that was with Cordero and several other people, Mr. Say,
Calvin Say, Sharon Haar, Mizuno. I don't like to see it. Several people. That could be anybody that works at 7-Eleven. These are legislators. If we're gonna win this fight or get closer to reality of being fair, we got to start putting names. It is too much innuendo and just
the
facts of the facts.
This I saw with my own eyes. There was Gene Ward. Well, he's a Republican, so, you know. But there were all these other Democrats, Mizuno, Sharon Haar, Fay was there, and I'm thrown out of the meeting in the Capitol building, which is supposed to be the people's building. This is paid for by the taxpayers. They didn't say private meeting. It just said meeting in process. So I went in, and I was asked by the sergeant-at-arms that I had to leave, that this was a private meeting. And I said, well, I won't say anything. I'm just going to sit in the back. They wouldn't even let me sit in the back.
And this was at the state capitol, right?
This was at the state capitol.
Public room.
And I said, but I promise I won't say anything. And she said, no. Then she turns around and says, this is a caucus meeting for those people that are here at the table. And
so was Cordero part of the caucus? Or
yes,
what was it a formal recognized official caucus? I don't know the rules, but...
Well, the thing is, she misspoke, because that's unless there's a secret caucus down at the Capitol, which I'm starting to believe there must be, if ordinary citizens can't sit in on meetings, and yet they're having non-elected people. Mm-hmm.
Well, what you say she? Churches. You say she misspoke. What are you basing it on? I mean, she is part of the system.
Well,
wouldn't you just take at face value and leave it at that? That she told you that it was a religious caucus, or what?
I think she realized that she misspoke.
Well, I don't. But it doesn't matter. If let her stand on, let her word stand. I mean, because answers. I mean, why would you ask someone a question and they give you something dumb for an answer, and then you go back and start guessing? Did she really mean that?
No,
she's a professional. Apparently, she did.
She said this is a caucus. Then she goes, no, it's a private meeting. But that's not what the announcement said on the door to the meeting. It says meeting in process. I have been at the Capitol. I have walked in on many meetings, and no one has ever asked me to leave.
Yeah.
And I went ahead and I filmed some of the people coming out, but I was so angry. The camera was shaking. I did get a representative say going out.
Yeah.
He had a tray of stuff he was pushing down. And when he saw me, all he could say was, well, hello, Carolyn. And I said, well, how you doing?
Okay, well, I'm trying to get what...
Right.
What specifically, I like to ask, is the gay and lesbian community, are they now speaking with one voice? Is it going to be so fragmented?
Yes.
Because what I saw it unfolding, and I'm thinking, masterful on the part of Abercrombie. He let the gay community stand there and bicker over what was some empty promises that they were going to have. There was a meeting August 5th, and then they were going to have some meeting on a Sunday, and then they were going to have, and something was in the works, right?
Oh, yeah.
The old carrot was being dangled, and then you had Alan Spectrum. Specter, he took it upon himself to malign or attack other gay representatives and all, and I'm sure Neil and the religious rights was just happy because it was working, and they're now, and they were antagonizing one another and biting at one another and even defending Neil, and Neil should have spoke up and said, yes, I threatened Michael Galoyou lose his job. I would take his job if he didn't go and pull those complaints. Why didn't Alan expect to dig into that? I mean, you know, this is the kinds of things that was set up an open path, or just a completely clear path, so that Neil can safely arrive when it comes election time. That's where he put first his own political benefit above the concerns of the gay community and people like myself who want to see democracy, want to see fairness come. We live in a democracy.
Well, the thing is, we've been set up for failure for a long time because you go back to Neil's campaign. I turned over to his campaign and to several people that were working in his campaign office copies of Dave Shapiro's column outlining Transformation Hawaii, calling for Hawaii to be the first state in the union to be a Christian state. On that day, on May the 5th, 2005, that article ran, across was a quarter-page ad or bigger, maybe third-page ad, by Transformation Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Mitch DiIorio's name as one of them, and all these other right-wing ministers calling for Hawaii to be the first state in the union to be Christian.
Mm-hmm.
When I turned that material over, I said, we have to be careful. I was told by a staffer, she said, don't you know that some of these people on this list from Shapiro and the ads are on the inside committee, are in the inner circles here? She said, I'm not sure you want to hand those out. I said, too late, already done it.
And the inside of what, Neil Abercrombie's campaign?
Yes.
Okay, because when you speak, you get right up there, and then you don't open the door. What specifically?
It was his inner circle for his campaign.
Neil Abercrombie.
Yes.
The religious right was.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they were. And I went, I couldn't believe that. See, I'm very naive about some of these things. I believed in Neil Abercrombie. How could he do this? He couldn't do this because he was honeymooning the LGBT community. Oh, we want this and that. And then, all along, right after he was elected, who does he appoint to Board of Education? Don Horner, one of the names that was listed in the ad. He's a pastor for New Hope Chapel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then, on top of that, he appoints one of the most vicious, radical priests from the 1990s, and that's Mark Alexander. He puts him in charge of the Department of Homelessness. And then they started calling him the czar.
Mm-hmm.
He put key people that have no interest, in fact, use everything they can to fight against civil rights, and he puts them on his cabinet.
Well,
what in the... Yeah. We, you know, and those of us who complained, we're shunned.
Yeah.
In fact, my husband wrote a letter to the governor explaining Mark Alexander, thinking Mike was good-hearted. He thought maybe Neil had been in Washington too long and didn't know the history from the 1990s. I was the one. This was the insult.
I'm coming down in a few minutes. You're going... go ahead.
Today's article. Read the advertiser.
What do I'm reading? What is the article? Real quick.
It is a guest column, and it's in their Views and Voices, and it's Bishop Silva offers unjust advice on gay. This whole week, for over a week, we have been bombarded in the newspaper and on TV about the bishop coming out about gays, the horrible things he said. He justifies discrimination, that there is just discrimination.
And this letter, Ned, what points do you want listeners to take away real quick?
Identifies this woman. Her name is Dawn. Dawn, I
That's
guess.
Okay. What specifically is
she's
she saying?
She's a Catholic, and she's calling the bishop on the letter he wrote.
Okay.
I also received an email last night that a priest in this diocese right here in Waikiki said that he has gotten very angry phone calls from upset parishioners who say they have children, sons and daughters who are gay, friends, other relatives, and they're very upset with the bishop.
Mm. Well, and that, so, okay, but...
So it's, you know, it's blowing up in front of their eyes.
Well, here's what I would say. Probably not going to blow up in front of the eyes because the challenge and the demands, unless what I've witnessed, unless the LGBT community starts to speak as one voice and not have the Allen Specters ripping and shredding at the others and not people attacking Joanne Adams, until you do that, you can have 1,000 letters to the editor. But when it comes down to it, when everybody then shows up at the state capitol with Neil Abercrombie there commemorating Martin Luther King, you're sending mixed messages. Someone, you talk about schizophrenia, they need to speak up. And what I see is missing in this community, in this whole effort, is that I don't see the commitment from the LGBT. They're walking so softly because they're going to offend someone. And as Dr. Martin Luther King, he didn't suggest you do that. You see, you stand out there and you fight and you make your voice heard and you sing "We Shall Overcome." But if you're going to whisper it and then say, but if you really want to hear the real strength of "We Shall Overcome," listen to Dr. Martin Luther King. No, if you really want to see a change, you must incorporate Dr. Martin Luther King's approach and acknowledge what was being taught and do it. But when you're fighting amongst one another, forget it. If it's over, and they'll hand you a bill that you probably hate that you ever knew them. So I'm just hoping for the best, that something's come out of this, call Neil Abercrombie on it.
Well, that's what we're asking people to do, is calling at 586-0034, mm-hmm. emailing at governor.abercrombie mm-hmm. at capitalhawaii.gov,
yeah.
capitalhawaii.gov,
right.
and tell him, because there's many of us that are working. There's many of us that have spent this weekend writing letters individually,
mm-hmm.
referencing items that we know about each of the legislators.
Yeah, well, they were already doing that, but then I especially you have lots of information, but I witnessed some of them telling you, "Well, Carolyn, just hold off. We got the governor got something going on." Hello, yeah, look what the governor had going on. It's called, I won't say, but anyway, I'm going to have to close down here, and
okay.
I will talk to you maybe next week or go on, but yeah, I would suggest that...
I'll have others call in to you.
Yeah,
I can't be the only voice.
They need to do something, because other people are talking, and they're hating one another. They need to regroup, gather themselves up by the pants, and put away their egos, and understand that... What it is, you got to fight for it. If you don't fight for it,
well, they need to do something other than have fancy parties.
Well,
big bucks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, all righty. Well, we'll talk again.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Aloha.
Bye.
All righty, folks. This is it's unfortunate to watch this, and having been around the civil rights movement and benefited from it, and knowing from scratch what it, and you get the same dynamics. They don't stop existing, and so people got to be aware that call your legislators and your senators or your politicians and let them know what your stance is and stand your ground. But if you got to go hang out with them, hobnob, go to $50 luau's and all, forget it. You're wasting my time, your time, and you just take whatever they hand you, because if you're sending them a mixed message, and you either join in with the people that support you, or you fall in love with those that are screwing you. I mean, it's just the way it is. So anyway, hey, this weekend, if you want to, you can go to carolcox.com and see some pictures we posted up on the Hawaiian Railway, the historical railway out there at Ever Beach. They really need your help. We took a lot of pictures and film yesterday and got a chance to ride. But the Hawaii Railway Society, please, if you have any free time, they need some help. They're soliciting. What they need is work and muscles and some donation financially. But any of you, carpenters, painters, or what have you, give them a call. And we'll post everything up on carolcox.com. But they really can use your help. In fact, it's in the news today. You can see that article. And I think they posted some of the information. But... it's an old part of Hawaii, and we really, I watched them yesterday putting in cross ties and what have you, and spikes, and there was a Hunt Corporation went out there and helped them, volunteered. But if you have any time or anything, please, and I'm going to have them on the show here soon to come in and talk about their efforts and to preserve this part of Hawaii. And it's really interesting. So it's the, again, the Hawaiian Railway Society right there at Renton Road in Ever Beach. So please chime in and give a hand. So we'll talk to you next week. And don't forget, I have this ukulele. So if you hear someone in passing or what have you that lost one, it's always available for them to pick up. So thank you, and we'll see you next week. Aloha.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.